Hello and welcome to the Chini Vision podcast, the very occasional outing into the world of retro with me, Chini Hill. And today I'm joined by retro enthusiast and sports broadcaster, Richard Shaw Wright. Hello, Richard.
Hello there. And now I definitely sound like some kind of sports broadcaster. No one speaks like that in the real world.
So, Richard, you presumably, like the rest of us, first got into computing when you were a kid.
The thing I remember, which is the strange thing, is we must have had a VIC-20, but I can't remember ever using it. I just remember it being sold. So I never actually have no memory, no recollection of playing on a VIC-20 or seeing one. I just know we had one and it was sold. We then borrowed my uncle's Spectrum because we used to go around to his and play on that. And he had all the greats, Manic Miner, Flight Simulator, didn't understand that, obviously, as a four-year-old. Snooker, which Vision Snooker, loved that. I think that might have been on a bit of a dodgy tape, though, so faster listening. Trans Am, Attic Attack. And so it was a great education into games because he had all the really great ones. And then Christmas of 1985, somehow, there is the fantastically large brown box, two brown boxes, one of which contains a green screen monitor and the other which contains the CPC 464, which I still own, haven't used for a long time. I don't think I'll tell you that it probably works, and I don't know where the modulator's gone, but it's still there and I'll never be able to get rid of it because of the sentimental value, even though obviously it's worth billions of pounds on eBay now.
I mean, the Spectrum whetted your appetite. So I'm assuming on the Amstrad, you started off with that free £100 of software hack.
Yeah, and I'm fairly sure that the first game I would have loaded is Fruit Machine because I was obsessed with Fruit Machines as a kid going to the seaside. Somehow haven't developed a gambling addiction. Roland on the Ropes, Harrier Attack, Oh Mummy. Didn't like Roland in the Caves because you had to use keys, and I've never been any good at playing games like that with the keyboard. So I love the free Amsoft JY1 joystick because I didn't know any better at that point. but yeah, it was a great to have all these games and a word processor and Time Man 1 or whatever it was called available to you, Animal Vegetable. We actually broke Animal Vegetable Mineral because we managed to fill it and we filled the cassette full of answers. Now, why I even bothered to save the answers to Animal Vegetable Mineral, I don't know, but yeah, I may have been the only person to have done that, and I don't know if anyone's ever played it since, to be fair.
It's a mixed bag of software, because it is what Alan Sugar would call a mug's eye for, in that you do have a bit of everything, a little bit of educational, arcade games, a utility, i.e. a word processor, even though you didn't have a printer or any really practical way to save that stuff. But my cousin had that pack. And the reason they got it was it's £100 of free software.
Exactly. That's what you want, isn't it? Especially when times were tight in 1985 or whatever. So to get a computer and a monitor, you didn't have to tie up the TV. You've got all these games. You've immediately got a software library. He knew what he was doing in those days, doesn't he? And obviously now on the TV, he's useless. But back in those days, Mr. Sugar, and we had plenty of his electronics around the house, he knew what he was playing at.
And how long did that JY1 last?
It can't have been that long, can it? Because they were all useless. Mind you, I didn't have Daley Thompson at that point, so I wasn't into joystick waggling games. So it probably lasted longer than most, because I was never a big player of the big arcade games of the time. Living in Selby at the time, there's no arcade there that we went to. You know, the only time we'd see an arcade was going to Scarborough on holiday, and even then, I was mostly on the Fruit Machines. So I was never a big arcade game player.
Presumably, you were at school at this time, so you mentioned your uncle having the Spectrum. What other computers were around in Selby?
You know, it was quite lucky because the girl at the end of my street, she had an Amstrad. She got one slightly later, so she had the pack which came with Daley Thompson Super Test and Kabbalah, which, you know, no one still knows how to play, do they? So we could swap games. That was good. There wasn't much illegal taping going on in the playground. And I can't remember many other people having computers at the time. There's certainly no Spectrum versus Commodore wars, which is strange because that seems to be the thing everyone goes back to in the 80s. But we had the BBC Micro at school, obviously, Granny's Garden, Pod. Definitely remember because, I mean, this is just a stupid thing. Folio, the word processing stroke, desktop publishing stroke, whatever you wanted. And we were tasked with making a newspaper front page. And for some reason, I mean, we used to watch the 6 o'clock news in our house, so I would be aware of what was going on in the world. So I wrote a story about the Hungerford Massacre. I mean, why is a seven-year-old doing that at school? But there you go. Always jealous, though, of the special needs class who had a ZX Spectrum. We had to make do with the BBC, but they had the Spectrum with all the games on it. So
at our school, we just had one computer per classroom. But other schools, and I don't know how yours was, had actual proper computer rooms, like the ones you used to see in Grange Hill, where they'd go in, there'd be their desks with all the computers. Or what did you have?
No, it was the BBC on a trolley. So it would be once a week, I imagine, thinking back. We didn't have one per classroom at that point, certainly not. By the time I was at secondary school, there was a computer room, but it was full of, even by that point, ancient PCs, which no one knew how to use, which, you know, was a bit pointless. But yeah, we had the BBC, the typical BBC on a trolley. That was our bread and butter computer back in the late 80s at Selby Abbey Primary School.
As you start buying software for your Amstrad, what are you getting?
Mainly budget games, because I would I'd only have so much pocket money. I would get the, when I say a big game at Christmas, the kind of big game we would get is, I think it was like a year or two later, we got the disc drive for the Amstrad. So we got Monopoly, because that's the game we can all play together as a family, which is bizarre because we owned it as an actual board game, which would be easier to set up and play. But that kind of thing. So it would be a big game at Christmas, but mainly go down to John Menzies, have a swizzle around of the, whatever you call that thing, carousel.
Carousel.
You begin with a C. And get random budget games. So as it turns out, I end up much, much later working on American horse racing. And one of the games I had was Sport of Kings, but I didn't have any particular interest in horse racing as a child, but Sport of Kings must have appealed from the graphics on the box, because as we know, all you've got to go with is the cover art and whatever. But then DZ and every Codemasters game I could get my hands on, even if they were rubbish. So again, we go back to, I can't play games with keys. Grand Prix Simulator, everyone loves it, but it's a keyboard-only game, so it's no good for me. I just had no talent of playing the game whatsoever, which was a bit of a shame, because obviously everyone loves it. But mainly budget games until you got slightly more money as you get older, and you buy things like Rainbow Islands, I remember, was a game I definitely bought as a full-price game. The bizarre thing is, looking back, you know, you go through the Amstrad Action adverts, and I'd be wanting for Christmas Every Second Counts or Bob's Full House, because I was a big game show nerd and still am. So where everyone's getting Turrican or whatever, which is probably not the right game at the right time, I'd be playing Bob's Full House.
And how was software availability for you? Because you talked about going through the carousel. And the thing there is you'd often see a game, or in my case, I'd see a game, oh, Commodore 64, oh, Spectrum. And I'd like to play that, but clearly I'm not going to be able to because I've got an Amstrad. How are you finding that software availability? Were you having to make decisions kind of slightly forced on you, as I sometimes did, of, well, I want to buy a game today and I can't possibly go home without a game, so I'm going to buy this pile of rubbish and take it home?
Well, something that must have been the case when I bought Revenge of the C5 or whatever it was called, because why would you ever buy that game unless you had the choice of something else? But in Selby at the time, we would have had John Menzies, and I can't think of anywhere else you could have bought software from. Certainly much later on, there were computer game shops, so you might have been able to get one from a video shop, but it would have to have been a trip to York on the bus, where there was a few more shops. Microbyte, I think, was one of them. The Computer Store, all great original names, which you had a much more larger choice. But again, I'd get some rubbish like On the Bench by D&H Games. I just had a very strange selection policy in my head of picking up whatever I did. And I don't know. It's nice because you can have memories of buying terrible games with your pocket money and thinking, well, this is rubbish. But then by that point, when you've had a computer for 3 or 4 years, you've got a large back catalogue of tapes you can just go back to anyway.
And those management simulators, CCS and all those companies, you're buying a lot of those. And what were your favourites?
Later on, Snooker Manager, because I managed to, I mean, hack into it, a nonsense phrase, isn't it? It's all in BASIC, and work out how to edit it so you didn't have to pay for training, so you can make your snooker player the best ever and hit a 147 with every break. But there's not much challenge of that, is there? I used to love Treble Champions. I think, was that E&J Software, I think? They produced a few ones like that. Cricket Master, which again, very basic simulators of sport. And at this point, I wasn't very sporty. My school wasn't very sporty. We didn't talk about sport much until I moved to a much sportier place. So it's odd that I was picking these games to play. I must have just liked playing with, you know, almost spreadsheets in a sense. But it was that kind of, until you get to like First Division Manager where there's graphics and, well, graphics is a rudimentary term, but, you know, that kind of thing that you're thinking, why am I buying these D&H games? But now with emulation, I can go back and play ones that I couldn't get at the time, like Banger Racer or Professional Golfer or whatever they're called. And they're all the same game, just with different packaging pretty much. But for some reason, they hold a great amount of nostalgia, despite the fact they're not actually brilliant.
And I'm thinking, am I right in thinking some of these games were only available via mail order? You'd see the adverts in the back of Amstrad Action.
I think they must have been, because I can't remember seeing Football Direct or anywhere, but you always saw the advert at the back of the magazine. And certainly there's even more obscure ones and all the various pools programs. I come up with all these ideas of things I'm going to do, and then I never get round to doing them because I'll find something else more interesting to distract me. Like at the moment, I'm replaying Championship Manager 93, 94 again and reliving my failed A-levels. I'd love to go back to one of these pools prediction simulators or the horse racing prediction simulators and see if I use them today, would they have any relevance or would they work at all, or were they just all a con? And I think we probably know what the answer is to that.
It's just manipulating statistics, but it would be interesting for, you know, to see, is it just kind of coming up with random stuff? How is it working? And to get someone to kind of hack into it. I mean, I say hack into it again, because like you pointed out, it's probably all basic. And if it's just working out on the form and stuff like that.
It's just the fact that there were so many of them. And I think there was a couple on cover tapes as well, weren't there? I'm sure there was a Pools Forecaster on one of the later Amstrad Action,
yeah.
Apps, yeah. Someone must have been buying them, although wouldn't be putting adverts in magazines and continuing to put adverts in magazines at the time. I'd love to know if anyone was successful with them.
I imagine it was quite, I mean, to be able to afford to put the magazine adverts in, they must have been quite successful. And of course, you've got low overheads. They're probably duplicating them on a twin tape deck or something at home, charging, you know, £7-8 for it, sending it out. And I imagine if you've got a large volume of these things, so you're probably turning over a fair few quid, especially because they're almost certainly doing it multi-format.
If I had the inclination, I mean, this is one of those things I should have done in lockdown, shouldn't I, when I had nothing to do. I should have actually looked at these programs and had a comparison competition. But I also don't have enough YouTube subscribers to justify messing around. Not really. I mean, I don't think there's any clickbait value in, will this pools predictor work from the 80s? Well, actually, probably there would be, wouldn't there? But someone else can steal that idea.
So how long did you hang on to the Amstrad for?
Well, I mean, I still have it, but as a
main machine.
Yeah. Which Christmas did I get the Amiga? I think it was 93. Because that was around that time, wasn't it, where as soon as, you know, my mates sort of had Mega Drives at the time, I've moved to Wakefield, so there's more people with computers. My best friend at the time had a Commodore 64, so I would play a lot of games on his computer that I couldn't play on mine, like American 3D Pool by Zeppelin. Loved that game. Obviously, it's a completely random, obscure game, but loved it, and he had creatures and stuff like that. Another friend had a PC. He had King of Chicago on it, which I thought, oh, this looks amazing. Still not good at it, but would have got the Amiga around 93. The Amstrad still would stay in the cupboard, if occasionally get it out. But I think the problem was, once you've played Pinball Dreams, once you've played Striker, which were the games that came with it, you think...
So you got the Silica pack then?
Yes, yeah. Yeah. Zool was there.
And Trans, right?
Yes. It's difficult to go back. As soon as you've played Sonic on someone's Mega Drive, you think, wow, this is where we're going now. So it's that sad realization that you've got all these memories and all these games and everything that you love playing about this machine, but technology has overtaken you. I don't know if that still happens today or not, because everything looks, you know, so similar, but in the last 10 years or whatever. But that big jump, quantum leap, I guess, that you have, you think, well, I can't really go back to this now, because this is the future. Well, it was at the time.
And which Amiga was that?
Amiga 600. I got it deliberately because it was smaller. It must have been the fear of having the Amstrad for so long that it was so big to get a smaller computer. And I know it's the one people don't like, do they? Because it's not got the numeric keyboard or whatever. But if I had to get one again, because it's so small, it obviously wouldn't take up too much space. But
how many times do you use that keypad on an Amiga?
Exactly. And I wasn't playing flight simulators or anything like that. I can only think of, I think there was one PD adventure game that used it. And again, you know, I get an Amiga. It's got all the great games, all the great graphics. And I ended up spending my time playing a PD cricket Sunday league simulator called All Rounder, which I still go back when I can be bothered to work out how to work out Amiga emulation, which as soon as I do it, I get bored of it because it's such a frustrating thing. I will go back and play this very dull, very simple cricket game made in Amos.
I remember having, and it may have been that game, a PD cricket game. It may have been that one. My mate had Graham Gooch cricket, and yes. I in the summer, I was down at the Hampshire, whatever it is, the Rose Bowl, or the Aegeus Bowl, sorry, give it its proper name. I recorded a little intro to Graham Gooch cricket, and I came back here, and I tried to play Graham Gooch cricket, and I gave up because I appear to be no longer able to play it. And that intro sitting there for me to one day to do a Graham Gooch cricket video.
Five great cricket games. There aren't many, are there? And the problem with something like cricket is it doesn't lend itself to a computer game, does it? With football, you can have a five-minute game or whatever, and it still feels like you're playing a match. And the same, similar for rugby, I guess, and ice hockey, American football. But cricket has to be a certain length. You can't play a five-over match. It's just pointless.
Rugby, I think there should be more good rugby games, and there doesn't really seem to be.
Well, this is the other thing, isn't it? And the Great Witchfinder channel hates Rugby Manager by Mastertronic. And I can completely understand why anyone who wasn't brought up in an area where rugby league is popular would hate a very dull rugby management simulator. But of course, when you're desperate to play a game of the sport that is massive in your area, you'll play any old rubbish. So Rugby Manager, it's on my eBay watchlist now, and I'm not going to buy it because it's stupidly expensive, and I haven't got the Amiga to play it on. But there was a game by, I think it was Audiogenic, called Rugby League Coach, which you used to make cups of tea. It was on the cover disc for a game, a magazine, a demo of it. You give your tea lady would make cups of tea, and if you didn't drink them, she'd get upset and things. But because it was such a rarity to find a game like that, you'd be desperate to get one. There was a game on the PC later called Super League Manager or something, and it was dreadful, completely unrealistic, and yet we'd play it because we had nothing else. So I was always a big fan of obscure sports games. You know, it's a shame there aren't more rugby games, but, you know, General Omu, wrong kind of rugby for me, but it's fun. And it's a bit like John Madden football, where you could pick it up and play it even if you're not a fan of the sport. You could pick it up and have an idea. And the best one of that genre is EA Hockey. The amount of people who would have played that game in the early 90s, never seen an ice hockey match, never been to one, never cared about it, but the gameplay was brilliant.
That's it. It's sometimes like hockey and speedball and things like that. If the game's fun, you don't even have to be into the sport, provided you can pick it up and you can play it.
One of our maths teachers set up a computer game club at school on a lunchtime and would bring in a Mega Drive, and we'd all take turns playing things like that. And any time a game comes up where a player gets sent off for slashing, you're going to think it's hilarious as a 13-year-old, and a 44-year-old or whatever, you'd think it's funny as well because, you know, we're all childish. But it's that kind of simple pick up and play and enjoy. And I don't want to say that you can't get those kinds of games there, because you can do, but I don't want to spend 20 hours or days and weeks playing a game or whatever. I don't have that time to invest anymore. I don't know how I must do, because I spend hours on Football Manager, but that's just, it's not a game, is it?
It's not even Football Manager, to be honest.
No. I don't know what it is anymore.
It's a Championship Manager 2024. Is that the East Championship Manager that became
Football Manager? Yeah, because there was the big split, and Championship Manager went on for there was another couple of them, but they weren't the same.
Did you buy games on a holiday? And I'm going to bring you round to something in a minute that I know we have in common.
Yes. Two places I certainly remember buying games. First of all, Scarborough. We used to go to the cricket every year there. And there was a great game shop down at the end of the street near the cricket ground called Wizard Games, which is now a Chinese restaurant. But I bought some great games there, like The Clue, On the Amiga, which is a wonderful robbery simulator thing, which I've always enjoyed playing. That's the only place I think I've ever seen in the flesh the Hello Hello game. I mean, I didn't buy it, which is surprising because I quite liked Hello Hello. I don't know if they had the Doctor Who game at the same time, because obviously they were made by the same company, but it's the only place I ever saw Hello Hello in the flesh, so to speak. And we used to spend the summers down in Guildford and down in the southeast, go to London a couple of days a week. I bought The Mystery of Arkham Manor, I think it's called that, at Harrods, because I remember being called Sir by the whoever was behind the counter, and bought a couple of games. We spent a day in Portsmouth for some reason, which coincided with a visit by Princess Diana, so someone could probably work out when that was. And I remember buying Tubba Rubber, or Tubba Rubber, however you pronounce it, because I'd always seen that game in the Amsoft catalogue and thought, this looks good, and had the chance to buy it, so I bought it. And one of the Adrian Mole games, which was great. And because we spent the summers in Guildford, I remember distinctly from a shop, but I can't remember where the shop was or what it was called, that's where I bought Rockstar Ate My Hamster. Those are some of the games I remember and the place I remember buying them. And isn't it strange that we keep these memories years and years later as completely pointless as they are?
Buying a game was a big event. Software wasn't instantly available on demand as it is now. You can go online and buy any computer game you want, download it to your Xbox, going somewhere and just going to a shop. Not every game would be available. You want Rainbow Islands, probably not there. You've got no idea what's going to be in the shop. And you mentioned Guildford, and we both used to do something in Guildford. In fact, my Amiga Silica pack came from a shop in Guildford, though it wasn't Silica, because I think they distributed these packs to other shops. But both of us used to go, and we don't know each other outside of
no,
this.
No, we've never met or anything, though. No.
So we both used to go, and later went on to both work in radio, to the top of the Friary Shopping Centre. Richard, will you take over?
Well, this is where the studios were. I assume that it's all disappeared now, because obviously local radio doesn't exist in the year 2024, where the studios of County Sound Radio were. And you could push your nose against the window and see the presenters hard at the craft. Obviously, when I got into radio in the early 2000s, you didn't have any of that nonsense of, you know, putting records on or CDs or whatever. It's all on computer. It was easy. Just watching DJs and thinking, this is what I want to do. I've never understood why I've wanted to do it. So that's a strange thing. But I did get a couple of T-shirts, which, you know, sadly are long gone because they certainly wouldn't fit me anymore. I think the mugs are still around somewhere. And I've certainly got some County Sound badges. I wish I still had the cookbook, of which I still choose one of the recipes from. But yeah, just imagine that. You could go to your local shopping centre, or where I was on holiday at the time, and see local radio in action. I remember going to the Surrey show one year, and it was just before BBC Radio Surrey launched, and took part in Mastermind, which they said was on the actual Mastermind chair, and I don't think it was. I don't think it was the Mastermind chair. But still, I got a goodie bag with some BBC Radio Surrey tab, and an invite to look around the studios. But sadly for me, they weren't open when I was still there, so I wasn't able to go.
I'm going to give you some numbers from 1 to 8, and it's word association. I'm just going to throw a word at you. So the first thing you can think of back, we may have discussed some of these things already, but yeah, any number, 1 to 8.
We'll go number 1 first.
Your memory of going to arcades.
Well, you see, my most recent memory of arcades is going to Arcade Club in Leeds, because I just didn't do that as a kid. Went to the amusements at the seaside, but never really played arcade games until much later, which is a very strange thing. So the only arcade machine I can really remember was at the old Selby Swimming Bath, which got knocked down after they found cockroaches there. And there was an arcade
machine.
That's
extreme.
Yeah, I know. Well,
the asbestos.
I mean, the unfortunate thing is, since then, they've had two leisure centres burned down. There was an arcade machine upstairs where you'd get the, but I can't tell you what the game was. It was just some generic run and gun shooter thing involving God knows what. But that's my main arcade memory as a child, is that one arcade machine in a swimming pool that doesn't exist anymore.
Another number.
7.
Sporting Triangles.
Oh, well, I mean, it's the best thing ever, isn't it? And for all those people bemoaning the loss of Question of Sport, it's always been rubbish, he says, censoring himself. Sadly, I am sad enough to have been on eBay long enough that I own a yellow Sporting Triangles pullover, which I think my one of my pictures on one of the social media things is still on there. So I've got a large selection of Sports and Triangles memorabilia, as in the jumper and the board game and a couple of quiz books.
And we should answer, we should say that Sporting Triangle was Central Television's answer to Question of a Sport, hosted by Nick, am I right saying Nick Owen?
Yeah, hosted, I think, a couple of series, and then it was somebody else who no one remembers or can remember. I think Andy something or other. But I'd certainly had the game on the Amstrad, and again, that's another game, you know, that must go for millions on eBay now, I assume. But
published by CDS and coded by Mr. Micro.
Was CDS Doncaster as well? There seemed to be a lot of software houses around Yorkshire at the time, which, as someone from Yorkshire, you pick up on these things because you're proud of everything that comes from the county, even when you shouldn't be. It's obviously massively proud of alternative software down the road in Pontefract.
It's them and the sweets in Pontefract, I think.
The big old Haribo factory, which is near the motorway now, yes. But yes, Sporting Triangles, much maligned, but...
One more number.
Three.
I'm going to phrase this very carefully. Gaming lusts, i.e. games on perhaps other systems that are unobtainable or systems that you wanted to have but never would have.
That's a tricky one, because when I had my collection, I would have had a lot of things that I would have wanted and never used. So the fact that I got rid of my collection wasn't there. I don't pine for it in so much as that. I pine for the what it's apparently worth on eBay, but not for having the stuff lying around doing nothing. Games, I mean, I guess it perhaps would be the aforementioned Ripper League Coach on the Amiga, which I'm granted is, you could do a million of these podcasts. I don't think anyone else would ever say that again.
So, at one stage you did have a collection. Briefly, what did you have in it all?
Too much. This was pre-eBay, so it was buying things from car boots and people getting rid of things. So I'd have had Commodore 16s, a couple of those, 64s, Amiga 500s, Atari STs, a couple of BBC Micros, a couple of 464s, never 664, 6128 though, 464 Plus, various Spectrums, a couple of Acorn Electrons, had a video pack G7000, the Atari XE system, which obviously is one of those where you think now, oh, we should still have that to sell on. A couple of other Atari 8-bits. That would have been generally, and a couple of, you know, NESs and Mega Drives and whatever, but maybe I think I did have an Atari 7800. I think I did at one point, but just needed the money at one point, and it was all just sat in a room doing nothing and all the games or whatever, and just sold it as a bundle on eBay. So as sad as it was, I wasn't using it, so I can't necessarily say I didn't have an emotional attachment to it. It was just one of those typical, whatever you collect, you hoard things, don't you? And then you get to a point where, I don't need any of this stuff. And whatever I'm collecting now, I'm sure I'll get to a point where I think, I don't need these things. I don't have an attachment to them, so I'll get rid of them. I mean, it's a shame I don't have them for the monetary value, but the Philips CD-i, that was a great buy from Cash Converters. That was good. But yeah, no, don't have any of them anymore, apart from the Amstrad and the Sharp MZ700.
And, I mean, having just moved house, it takes up space. There's so much of it, you forget you've got certain things. I'm emotionally attached to a lot of what I have, especially the stuff I've owned a very long time. But some things, like, I almost mentioned the ST, it's like, I have that because of the channel, because I need to be able to capture stuff in it. It's quite odd. And it's very easy to become that hoarding thing. You need spares, and suddenly you just become overwhelmed.
I did sell a Plus 4 a few years ago to someone in Spain. I don't think it works, but they still paid 30-odd quid for it.
It's nice. A Plus 4. Of course it doesn't work.
And I did have an MSX at one point. Now you said MSX. It's remembering all the things I had. But yeah, it was nice to own them and nice to play on them for about 10 or 15 minutes. But then it's like having the PlayStation Mini. A friend gave me, he had a spare one for some reason, so he just... And it's nice to go back and play on it, but I did have a PlayStation 1, but I didn't have that same emotional attachment to it and the games on it that I have with the Amstrad, because I had it for so long and it's attached to so many points in my life, whereas the PS1 was just, well, that's gone on now, here's the PS2. And I mean, I've got a PS3, which I very rarely play on, but you can get games for 50p for it. So if I see something in CEX or whatever when I'm bored on a lunch break and I think, oh, go on, I'll get that. And I may never play it, but at least I've got it in my cupboard. If I ever get bored and I ever need to do something, I can go and play on that instead.
It is those connection points and discovering new stuff as well on the systems that you've owned for years and years. And that's part of the joy of Chinivision, that actually, okay, a lot of those games I pick up are terrible, but then for one in every five is going to be an absolute gem that you've never played before, and that's the joy of it. So, I mean, there's different ways to approach collecting. I know a lot of people would wince at you getting rid of stuff, but I can perfectly see if you're not using it and you're not attached to it and you've just acquired stuff in that era when you could just acquire stuff, like I acquired my BBC Micro because it was being, well, my BBC Master because it was being thrown out, I can see how those things would be easy to come by and eventually you're going to go, no more. And of course, you do have a YouTube channel, you mentioned it. So where is it and what does it cover?
Well, the real one, the one that earns money, is 4020 Live or 4020 TV or whatever it's called, which is the Rugby League channel, which the podcast was nominated for an award but didn't win. So we don't talk about that. But my own one, I think it's just either My Name, Richard Shorewright, or Wakefield Outlaw or whatever. If you just search for my name, it will come up with all kinds of rubbish on there. It is generally a collection of just stuff I've put together over the past 10, 12 years. So there's some old games on there that I've emulated. There's bits of random old TV. I'm not one of those channels. I guess YouTube probably do monetize it, but I'm not a monetized channel on my personal one because I haven't got enough subscribers because no one's really interested in watching the rubbish I've made.
I'm sure lots of people are interested in watching the very interesting things you have made, and I mean that most sincerely, as Huey Green would say. So check out, that's 4020 Live for the
Yes, or 4020 TV or something like that. It will find its way there, and you can see how great I am with making graphics and stuff. Please watch my wonderful new idents, which include snow on a rugby pitch and a stand being knocked down.
Most of our audience are more interested if they are made with cardboard or get a big silver rugby ball and rotate it with some kind of classical music. That's kind of the Chinny Vision audience. We appreciate that. Live from Wakefield. Actually, no, yes. It wasn't live from Norwich. It was from Norwich.
From Norwich, yeah.
Quiz of the week. Never live.
Live from North Leeds every Monday at 6 with our merry band of viewer.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for joining me, Richard. And do check out Richard's channels.
Thank you.